Tov, everybody, and welcome to Parashat Hukat. This week, I'd really like to discuss an amazing topic that has for years really eluded my understanding, and I think finally this year I've come across an explanation that has really not only captured my interest, but has convinced me that I now understand the text on a deeper level than I ever have before. And I am extremely grateful for that, and I have to thank Rabbi Menachem Liebtag for that, for his amazing articles that he has on his website. And of course, the episode that I'd like to discuss is Moshe hitting the rock. And as you go through this time and time again, year after year, you hear about the fact that there's so many different mefarishim, so many different commentators that all give Moshe Rabbeinu a different type of mistake and a different sin, and to the extent that Abarbanel says, you know, poor old Moshe Rabbeinu, the guy makes one mistake and we kind of pile upon him so many different mistakes. It's kind of almost humorous to realize that. So let's go through the methodology that Rabbi Liebtag says in order to figure out really what it could be that Moshe does wrong. So there are actually five commands given by God to Moshe, and let's see if Moshe follows each one. So God says, "Kach et hamateh." Number one, take the staff, ve'akel et ha'eda, ata ve'aron achicha, and gather the people. So that's number two, ve'dibartem el hasela aleinehem ve'natan memav, and you shall speak to the rock before the people, and it shall give its waters. Ve'osetal lahem mayim min hasela, and you shall draw forth water from the rock. And you shall give to drink to the people and to their animals. And then we see, and Moshe takes the staff exactly as God had commanded. So that cannot possibly be the issue with Moshe's actions. Clearly, number one from this list of five cannot be something that is incorrect. How about number two? Vayakilu Moshe ve'aron et hakahal El Penei Sala, and Moshe and Aharon gather the people exactly as commanded. So let's see, maybe the next thing is what's wrong. Ve'yomer lahem, and Moshe says to them, so already we're seeing a discrepancy. Instead of speaking to the rock, Moshe speaks to the people. And he says, Shim'u na hamorim, hamina sila azen otzi lachem mayim. He says, listen here, you rebels. Shall we bring forth water from this rock? So that already could start to trigger us and make us realize, okay, this must be where Moshe makes his mistake. And that's Rashi's explanation, of course. Vayare Moshe et yado vayachet asela b'mateu pa'amayim. Oh, sorry, this is actually Rashi's explanation. I mean, Harambam and Haramban, their explanation was the words that Moshe used and the way that he went about rebuking the people. And of course, this fifth command and this and the way that Moshe carries it out, that's actually Rashi's explanation, the fact that Moshe hits the rock rather than speaking to it, and eventually the waters emerge and the people drink. So the way that Rabbi Liebtag puts it is that when you explore all the different mefarshim, it's amazing that each and every single one of them has amazing arguments, not only for their own cause, but also to discredit the other arguments. And they, in a way, knock each other out. And Rabbi Liebtag explains that the reason why these mefarshim seemingly are not really hitting the text at its heart is because they're looking in the wrong place for Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake. Where should they have been looking? Not in this paragraph, but in the paragraph right before. In the paragraph before that, we see how this entire thing came about. We see the people approached the desert of Sin, Miriam perishes. There was not enough water, and the people get really angry, and they start complaining, and they don't even want to acknowledge the fact that it was positive that they left Egypt, and they're really in a bad place. And how does Moshe react to this? We see that Moshe's reaction is to fall upon his face. And that alone should remind us of the fact that this is a repeating theme throughout Sefer Bemidbar, where Moshe Rabbeinu is falling on his face. We see it at Kivrot HaTa'ava. We see it at the Meraglim episode. We see it here in Parashat Hukat. We're going to see it later on in Parashat Pinhas. It repeats itself over and over and over again. It happened in Parashat Korach as well. So I think the real proof for Rabbi Liebtag's explanation that Moshe's real mistake was falling on his face and not what he did at the episode with the rock per se, could be proven with the intertext that he shows to last week's parasha, actually. But before we really point out these specific intertexts, I think it'll be really valuable for us to notice the fact that there were three times in the history of Am Yisrael that Am Yisrael complains for water. The first time comes right after we leave Egypt. The second time comes in Exodus chapter 17. And the third time comes here. The difference is the first two are in the first year of the desert. And this episode here is in the 40th year of the desert. And the amazing thing is, at the second time that Bnei Yisrael complained for water, Moshe's immediate response is not to fall on his face. Instead, he was a different type of leader in that first year in the desert. Moshe immediately responds to the people. He says, "Mattirivun armadi, mattinasun et Adonai. Why should you challenge me? Why should you test God?" And the beauty of the realizing this, and actually the fact that it's a similar name to the place that we're at right now, which is Memeriva, the place in that context is called Masa Umriva. And you compare that to Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction here, and it's night and day. So Rabbi Liebtag points this out. He says, okay, so this seemingly is really Moshe's mistake. And God's telling Moshe, that you did not take the opportunity to make a Kiddush Hashem is because the lack of a proper response by Moshe. And Moshe's falling on his face really just does not cut it at this stage in the game. The question is, why is Moshe not responding the way he properly did previously in his career? So I think we need to add something really, in my opinion, amazing to this discussion to really fully flesh out the topic. And that is, as promised, the intertexts with Parashat Korach. In Parashat Korach, we see that there was a complete rebellion against Moshe and Aharon. And very similar sentiments were said here, as were said in Parashat Korach. They say the words, "Hen gavanu avadnu kulanu avadnu." It's amazing because the same word, gavanu, appears in our context as well. Velu gavanu. They said, we wish we had died rather than dying here in the desert. And where would they have rather died? I wish we died along with those people in Parashat Korach. That's an amazing thing. The Torah is telling me they're approaching a level of disrespect and rebellion that we saw in last week's Parashah. And you continue reading and you see, why did you bring us to this desert to die here? They're sounding like that Tanva Aviram, who say, and to bring us to this terrible place, and Rabbi Avi Harari pointed out to me that they say, these are the three specific fruits that were taken by the Meraglim. So the Torah is trying to portray for us that we're approaching again a level of rebellion that could parallel that of Parashat Korach, and even maybe that of the Meraglim episode. So clearly Moshe's response needs to be accordingly. It needs to be as strong as it was in his first year, in his tenure, as the leader of Am Yisrael. So we're noticing these connections, and we say, hey, isn't that interesting? God tells Moshe, please take the staff. He doesn't tell Moshe, please take your staff. And when Moshe takes the staff, it says, Vayikach Moshe et hamate min lifnei Adonai. Moshe takes the staff from before God. Do you know of a staff in last week's parasha that was put before God? Yes, that was Aharon's staff, not Moshe's staff. So Moshe should have known, based on last week's parasha, to go and retrieve Aharon's staff. So let's look at that context. What did God tell Moshe in last week's parasha? He said to Moshe, after the staff of Aharon sprouted almonds, and it was a symbol to the people that God had chosen Aharon, and the way that God responds to rebellion, God says, put that staff in the Aharon. He says, put it lifnei ha'edut. Quote, lemishmenet leot libnei meri, as a sign or a symbol to the rebellious ones. And that explains exactly why Moshe uses the language Shim'una Hamorim. Listen, you rebels. He was following exactly, word for word, the words of God. Livne Meri Shim'una Hamorim. And God says, Utchalti lunotam me'alai viloyamutu. Meaning, basically, next time they complain, I want you to go and get this staff. And that's exactly what he does. So Moshe's mistake is not anywhere to be found in that parshiya. Moshe is following exactly what God wanted him to do. The issue is that Moshe had to be asked. He should have known from last week's parasha how to respond in a situation like this. He should have been sharp enough to respond the way he used to in his first year. And the tragedy in this week's parasha is that Moshe is not responding to the people the way he used to. And I read a beautiful article a few years ago from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And he wrote that the leader of a free people, who is going to be Yehoshua ben Nun, cannot be the same type of leader as the leader of an enslaved people, who is Moshe Rabbeinu. So it's not that it was really a punishment for Moshe not to go into the land. Really, it was just a leadership thing. God says, Lo taviu et hakahal hazeh la'aretz. You shall not bring them, you shall not lead them into the land. This is not a punishment per se. It's just an acknowledgement of a lack of fittingness or suitability between the leader and his leader and his people. So, you know, the way that Rabbi Liebtag ends his article, I think, is really beautiful. He says that it's not so much that Moshe was really the wrong type of leader, but it was rather that we as a nation lost the merit for a person of the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the man who spoke to the Shekhinah. This is the person who confronted Pharaoh himself. For us to continue over the 40 years to present him with these ridiculous, almost at times, complaints was no longer fitting for a man of his caliber. And I think when we think of it in that way, we do not need to think of Moshe as having failed per se. Rather, we could realize that it's just a matter of a leadership style. And there's nothing wrong with a leader acknowledging, along with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, of course, that his time has come and that it's time for a new leader. And I remember being so moved the first time I ever learned about this, that Moshe Rabbeinu, upon being told that he's not going to be the leader anymore, he looks at God and he says, Velo tehye adat Adonai katzon asher en lahem ro'eh. God, please, I don't even care about myself, but please appoint somebody else instead of me. Find somebody else that will lead this nation. Let them not be like a flock without a shepherd. So I think when we think of Moshe Rabbeinu, we could think of a leader who was so amazing that we ended up losing the merit for him. A leader who was so selfless that he didn't even care about his own ego when he heard that he wasn't going into the land. Rather, he cared about what's going to happen to the people. May we all take a page from Moshe Rabbeinu's playbook. May we learn from his leadership qualities. And may we continue to be inspired by the fact that we could learn a text for so many years and then have a new explanation of it, reinvigorate ourselves, and lead to a completely new understanding of the text. Thank you, and Shavua Tov.